Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Your life, your country. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast.
First of all, voter fraud is a myth. It does not exist.
Voter fraud is incredibly rare. These claims are more efforts to delegitimize our election system.
There is no systemic voter fraud in the country. Right. It just does not exist.
This is the common refrain you hear from the left. No worries if 1.5 million people have to be purged from the voting rolls in California, which is either it's complete or it's almost complete, because a court action was actually filed to enforce cleaning up of voter rolls. They don't care. I mean, they don't care. Well, if they can try to make an issue about the integrity of the vote, about how you're racist, they'll do it. Okay. But we want to ensure that, number one, people don't vote in multiple states. Number two, people don't vote who are not registered. And number three, illegal immigrants do not vote. Okay. We want everyone who wants to vote, who's eligible to vote, to be able to vote. And, you know, show IDs at the polls, not just give a name. And as we see in so many states across the country, you just show up and you say, oh, this is my name. You don't know who's voting. Joining us now is Newt Gingrich, of course, former Speaker of the House, New York Times bestselling author of Trump's America, host of Newt's World podcast, which is fantastic. And, of course, his website. We always link it up on our Facebook page and lauraingraham.com. Newt, you see this happening again, where we're coming up to another presidential election, and these legitimate concerns about voting fraud, and especially states where there's razor thin margins last time around, and the left reflexively says, aha, you're trying to disenfranchise African Americans.
First of all, I think in your opening comments, you had it basically right. Start with a simple premise. We do want to disenfranchise people who are dead. I mean, I think,
good point.
You know, I know this is bold, this is out on the edge,
yeah.
But I'm prepared to debate any Democrat anywhere in the country that once you're dead, you lose the right to vote. Now, I'm old enough. I remember when Chicago and South Texas both voted people who were dead, and John F. Kennedy won the election based on having stolen those two states, Texas and Illinois. And at the time, Republicans weren't prepared, partly because of the Cold War, they weren't prepared to make the kind of case they should have made. And there are counties in the United States that have more people registered than live in the county. And so you have an automatic case here. If you have more people registered than live in your county, probably a good number of them shouldn't be allowed to vote. And, of course, the left, which passionately believes in rigging the election and passionately believes that it cannot win if it's not allowed to cheat. So the left goes crazy over this idea that we're actually going to insist that, for example, that only people who are alive should vote. Now, again, it's bold. It's out on the edge. But I'm prepared to defend the proposition that only people who are alive should be allowed to vote. Then we can work from there to only American citizens, and you should only be allowed to vote once. I mean, there are a couple of these steps you can take in the debate, but I'd like to start with the first one being that if you have more people in your county registered than live in your county, there's something profoundly wrong.
Newt, there's another issue, and it's one that to me is all too predictable. And Bill Gertz has a great piece about this a couple weeks ago. China's covert attempts to subvert Trump's reelection. I mean, China obviously wants someone who's not going to rock the boat like Trump did. They want to go back to the way it was before, where they just are on the slow march to global domination, and they get basically take Taiwan and maybe even move into other parts of Asia, and then, you know, cement the deals in Africa and South America and keep a pace. But apparently there's China's conducting an aggressive disinformation and influence campaign designed to block the reelection of President Trump, according to Bill Gertz, who did an enormous amount of research on this. And meanwhile, they're still stuck on the Russian narrative over there at MSNBC.
The Republicans for the most part, don't like the theory that Donald Trump is beholden to Russia. And Trump apologists in the media get very angry whenever anybody suggests that and start pushing back. And it's the anti-Trumpism that they've hidden behind for years to keep their subscription rates up or to try to just stay afloat. I do wonder at the end of this week, what is the Republican explanation for a president who has ceded Afghanistan now and said, go in, take over, we'll get out. And the fact that he's doing nothing to protect American democracy, what is their explanation? If they don't like that Donald Trump is on the take or he's being blackmailed by Vladimir Putin, and there has been no evidence of that, what's their explanation?
Well, look, I mean, they're not going to mind the Chinese breaking in to defeat Trump because that is a moral and virtuous position. Whereas if the Russians were trying to beat Hillary, that was a sign of enormous danger to America. And I think you have to recognize how much of this is situational. These people hate Trump so deeply that they become unhinged. And that's a great deal of what's going on. And the news media, it's almost like they can't think because they become so enraged and so focused on the existence of Trump that whatever their normal cognitive process is disappears.
And by the way, apparently, according to this real estate tycoon who's exiled from China, he said that the campaign within China to affect the American election has been underway since the 2018 midterms. And it basically involves, Newt, enlisting Chinese elements here in the United States. And they've been working through the universities, working through the high-tech industry, and that this is going to be widespread, yet, of course, not really reported on. I mean, he goes into great detail about conversations that were actually took place with the vice premier of China, Vice President Wang Qishan in Beijing, that's where the initial meetings on this took place.
Yeah, I've been working on a book on China, which will come out in October.
Oh,
and it's amazing to me the depth of penetration of the Chinese in many of our campuses. And two of the senators, Senator Rubio and Senator Cruz, have done real work on trying to get us to recognize that we're going to have to adopt a whole new set of rules to deal with just how really bad the situation is trying to deal with the Chinese institutions that come in the U.S. for the specific purpose of subverting us. I mean, this is a genuine Cold War in precisely the manner of the campaign with the Soviet Union. And people don't want to recognize how real and how serious this is.
Newt, I want to move into what's happening in the presidential election because I always like to see where the betting sites are. The betting sites are favoring right at this moment Elizabeth Warren to be the nominee. And it seems to be this sense of the inevitable collapse of Joe Biden. They've been kind of cheering this on for some time, this narrative, and he's still pretty much the same, even a little higher than he was in June in the overall standings. But I guess we know from recent experience where you stand today in the Democrat Party doesn't mean you're going to actually be the nominee when it all is said and done.
Yeah, Hillary is, I think, 30 points ahead of Obama nationally just before Obama won the Iowa caucuses. So you can't – let me confess up front for all of our listeners, though, that I was just wrong. I thought Kamala Harris had the best opportunity to become the nominee, and I didn't realize when Willie Brown, who was her mentor and had apparently a relationship with her. Brown is one of the smartest politicians in America, former Speaker of the Assembly in California. Mm-hmm. And when he wrote a piece in San Francisco saying, look, she just can't make it. Basically saying she can't hit major league pitching, and she's in the end just not going to be there. I underestimated how real that was, and she's had a terrible couple weeks. And in the process, Elizabeth Warren has put together a pretty impressive campaign. Now, I also agree with the way you just said, the way you said those things, one of the interesting challenges we have. I mean, everybody thinks that Biden can't make it, except Biden isn't particularly falling apart. So you have to ask yourself, if we're all so clever and we all know we won't make it, how come he's still slugging away and, you know, moving forward and he's still viable? It's a puzzling moment, I think.
Well,
you can't assume automatically, we understand.
I said on Monday night's Ingram Angle that it's a Hillary 2.0. This is a redux of Hillary in many ways. He's the more establishment candidate. He's being pushed in this case mostly by his wife, I think, who seems very a driving force behind running. Obama didn't even want him to run, apparently. Obama's like, Joe, you don't have to do this, man. You don't have to run, Joe. You don't want to. So it's a tacit way of saying don't run. And meanwhile, there's not a big enthusiasm for Biden, except when you compare him to the other candidates who are also, you know, there's no one, other than Warren, I guess, and Sanders is just, you know, I don't see him getting it, but there's just not a lot of enthusiasm for Biden, and there wasn't a lot of enthusiasm for Hillary. Their crowds are meager and slim, and none of the young people seem to be thrilled about it, and there you are. That's where we are.
You know, I thought that Sanders really hurt himself in the second debate because he looked angry and unapproachable and kind of like he was a one-trick pony who could just yell at people. And in the long run, that's, you know, people don't vote for a potential president who is hostile to the very people that are supposed to be electing them. And I thought it was a very strange performance, and he's dropped about 12 or 14 points, and I don't see him recovering because there's no natural reason for it. On the other hand, it was very funny. Apparently, 2 or 3 days ago, Biden's in some crowd and he's going, I'm having bigger crowds than everybody. I mean, have any of you seen anyone have a bigger crowd? And about 2/3 of people in the room said yes. So I think we actually have seen a lot of other people have bigger crowds. And he didn't know what to say at that point. It sort of blew his whole argument.
What would you say to President Trump? I know you talk to him, I'm sure, quite regularly, but he's 73 years old and he has great political instincts. He also swings at every pitch. If I were he, I wouldn't elevate people like Scaramucci or, you know, I wouldn't even mention. I mean, these people are just irrelevant. Yet he does seem
He doesn't just swing at every pitch. When he gets bored, he throws balls up in the air and just hits them.
Yeah, that's true.
It's kind of like he doesn't like quiet, so he's constantly making noise.
But do you think the American people are wearying of this? I mean, his numbers aren't where they should be for an economy is this strong. They're just not. He should be up at 60% approval.
Ironically, his numbers are about where Obama was and I think about where Reagan was. But he has much more opposition that's hardened. And I think that frankly, if he picked fewer fights, he would probably see his numbers get better. I do think people just get tired of it. You know, they get to a point of going, okay, you know, do we really have to fight over Greenland? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a challenge.
Yeah. Well, I think especially for suburban women, he did pretty well with the women vote last time around, but you just get the sense that you need more happy warrior and less, you know, cantankerous warrior. So I think you need the tough fighter, but a happy warrior. Everyone knows he's tough and he can fight, but the positive, happy America's gonna be even greater. Keep making America great, or make America greater. I think MAG is better than keep America great. I like MAG, but. I don't know. I just get this feeling that he really isn't content unless he's in some brawl with an irrelevant person. like Joe Scarborough. I mean, Joe Scarborough, who cares? I mean, it's just, I don't know. I mean, but I just like, I've been saying this for years, and then he won the presidential election. But is it, I think
But of course, part of it is a strategy of total information dominance. I mean, he takes all the oxygen out of the room. Nobody else can get heard. And so in that sense, I think he's probably fairly content that, you know, it sustains his celebrity status. People show up at his huge crowds, and he gets some sense of security that he must be doing something right. I think what it undercuts him is that all of the noise makes it harder to get across how many really good things are going on. You may have noticed today the number of people applying for unemployment benefits went down. After all this talk about a recession, the fact is that we have more job openings than we have people looking for work. Now, that's a happy thing. It's a positive thing. And I think sometimes you never get around to seeing that because we're in the middle of all these other fights.
Right, and I think that's what the left wants us to be, because otherwise people feel pretty happy and confident and optimistic, and they can't have that. So the left is in the unenviable position, I believe, of having a very dark vision of America. For all their talk of peace, love, and understanding, they're incredibly negative people. Trump seems to be having a good time most of the time. Sometimes he gets ticked off, and that's fine. But that's why I just think the happy, positive, this is our future, and we're going to grab it, and we're going to take this mountain, and we're going to take the next. I just think people want to be on that ride. They don't want to be on the pessimistic, dark vision of America ride, and that's where I think Trump has the edge.
Well, I think historically, people who are optimists have always had a big advantage in America. We tend to elect presidents who are optimists. We tend to think that the future can be better. We're always looking for, you know, a better place to live, a better car, a better job. We're actually a very forward-looking, optimistic people overall. And the left is exactly the opposite. And the left has this passionate need to somehow see the world as terrible, and we're all bad people. And I think most Americans don't believe that.
And Newt, this entire dynamic where Trump comes in and does a lot of what he said he would do. I mean, we have a ridiculous budget deficit and a ridiculous debt that I'm frankly really disappointed the Republicans are not trying to deal with. I presume they'll deal with it in the second Trump term, but they're certainly spending a lot of money that we don't have. But he's done a lot that he said he was going to do, and I think that drives the left crazy. And he has driven people who used to be somewhat reasonable on occasion, and even esteemed historians like John Meacham, into an apoplexy. Let's listen.
Russia is trying to undermine American democracy, Mr. President. Do something about it. And yet this president refused to do anything about it. What type of picture does it paint?
As gloomy as at any point in the history of the country in terms of a president's conduct of our policy toward a foe and or a rival. I don't remember a president who seemed as so clearly a willing agent of a foreign government.
That just takes my breath away, Newt. That's John Meacham, who I've known for decades. That's really what a historian thinks has happened. Okay.
No, but of course Meacham's a liberal, and so Meacham has a challenge that he has to pay. You know, he is of that world. Those are the people he goes to cocktail parties with. They all believe this.
An agent of Russia? They're still on that? Russia sized the economy of what, France? Meanwhile, China has a billion plus people, and they're moving into every sector of global economics and manufacturing and development and research, and they just sleep through that conversation. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, well, but that's because you are not of the true faith. If you were a true left winger, you would understand that you have an obligation. That this is absolutely what we have to believe, and that if we don't believe that, we're not good people.
It's I've got to say, it's it takes my breath away. I don't think he was as left wing as he's become under Trump. Trump has forced. I mean, I think he smoked them all out. They were always like that. You're right. They were always like that, but they hit it better. Now he's just smoked them all out on being open borders.
Collectively. Remember, they've collectively also gone to the left. So that the pressures to go with them to repeat this nonsense, because it's who we are. It's what we have to believe this. Otherwise, we don't belong to the club.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big part of what this is all about, that they're really compelled psychologically to believe all this.
Newt, recession, I know the Russia, racism, and recession, the three R's. This is the Democrats' entire, I think, playbook. And they really, as you could hear from that soundbite we just played, they haven't dropped Russia. They're still, of course, on racism, and I heard your comments the other day about that New York Times 1619 project, but they're really banking on and hoping for recession.
What we are seeing is that the proverbial chickens are coming home to roost. Donald Trump inherited a great economy from Barack Obama, one that was steadily growing, and everybody remembers the doldrums, the pits that Barack Obama lifted the economy up from.
Oh my
but
God.
Now you have a tax scam for the top 1%. You have tariffs, which are bad for our farmers, bad for our businesses, bad for our manufacturers, bad for our retailers. And so, yes, I mean, what he's done is he's implemented his own policies and he screwed up Barack Obama's good economy. Thank you, Donald Trump.
First of all, flatlining wages, anemic GDP growth, still ridiculous upside down numbers on labor force participation. A lot of people just gave up looking for work. Manufacturing jobs grew at a snail's pace because of all the ridiculous trade deals. And that yet this is where they are. So he inherited a great, robust economy from Obama. Yeah, there was some expansion, but it was nowhere near what other economic expansions and recoveries had ever been.
Well, look, I think that's part of the challenge to the left, is that we're now in year three of a Trump economy, which has been more robust, and ironically, from the standpoint of liberals, the group which has had the largest increase in wages are the bottom one-fourth of the country. So the Trump prosperity is actually affecting people who historically liberals claim to care about. And I think when you have 7 million job openings and only 6 million people looking for work, you really have a pressure to go out and hire folks and to pay them more, and that's what's happening all over the country. And so they're desperate for a recession. I don't think they're going to get one. I think that the economy will keep growing because the underlying fundamentals are very, very powerful. And we are today the healthiest economy in the world. I mean, if you look at what's happening in places like Germany or France or Italy, it's astonishing how much better off we are.
And Newt, we couldn't let you go before your commenting on the use of this New York Times project to influence young people in schools. The Pulitzer Group has partnered up with the New York Times and is offering copies of the 1619 project to schools across America. And they're printing thousands and thousands and thousands of copies.
Sure.
And you've always said this, you lose the historical record and the telling of history and you lose the youth. Tell us what we need to know about this.
Well, I think, and I'm actually going to write about this starting with my newsletter tomorrow. And my title is going to be 1619 or 1776.
Mm.
Which of these two dates defines the real America? And the objective fact is that the entire planet had slavery. The place that began to break down was America, and in fact there were colonies that were outlawing slavery even before the American Revolution. And the centerpiece of freedom on the planet is not so, you know, again, I do think you have to take slavery very seriously. You have to recognize its impact on the black community. You have to recognize how illegitimate it was, and that it was, in fact, a terrible institution. And that's part of what happened in the Civil War. But I also try to point out to people, you know, there were 400,000 Northern whites who died liberating the slaves. So to have it purely as the centerpiece of American history of slavery is, I think, profoundly false. Slavery is very important. It's worthy of being studied. There are a lot of other things worthy of being studied. And certainly if you were African-American, you could make the argument that from your standpoint and your community, it was the central factor that shaped several hundred years. But on the other hand, what ultimately has liberated us is a group of people in 1776 and 1789 who invented a form of self-government and the rule of law, which has stood the test of time and which has allowed us to extend, and even in their first documents, they were beginning to find ways to gradually get rid of slavery. And that was a much more bold and radical position at the time than people want to recognize today.
Dinesh made the point yesterday that there are so many untruths or misrepresentations and omissions in this New York Times piece, because it was done in an effort to frame not just history, but Trump. And so there was no mention of Booker T. Washington. There was no mention, really, of the framers who were adamantly against slavery. Even those whose family owned slaves were looking for a way, as you said, to get rid of it. But in 1619, Dinesh said there were about, I think, 20 or 30 slaves in the United States, as far as they could count. That was not the driving force of America.
The first shipload to arrive in 1619 had 20 slaves. You'd have to argue that slavery was a significant institution. It had a significant role, particularly in the South. But it was never the defining or dominant institution
of America. Right.
The left will refuse to get into an argument in which you look at pre-European slavery in the Americas, and look at pre-European slavery in Africa and the Middle East, and the degree to which slavery around the world was not a particularly white phenomenon. It was a global institution. And very often it was local people who were enslaving other local people and then selling them. Now, that's not a topic that the left will even begin to talk about, because their goal is to create a history which condemns America.
Yeah, so that's why they have to say it's America's institution. No, it was... When the founding of this country, when we declared our independence from Britain, we established the framework that would ultimately lead to the abolition of slavery. But it has to be all about America in order to ultimately, I think, what they want to do is jettison the Constitution. I think they want to get rid of all these documents, Newt. Is that too off the wall to say? To me, that's where this is all going.
I think there's a lot to it. I just finished rereading Theodore White's Making the President in 1972, and it is eerie how many of these themes go back into the McGovern campaign and the left-wing radicals in the late 60s, and they have just been growing in strength on the college campuses and in the newsrooms, but they're all the same things. You had people in the McGovern movement who wanted to abolish the Constitution back then.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, there's this very deep left-wing hostility to America. They see America as a bad place.
And AOC says the other day that the Electoral College is racist. Oh, my God. Electoral College is the one that kept the northern states having equal representation in the Senate with the bigger southern states. You don't even know basic history, and you're out there being quoted by legitimate journalists? Crazy.
Well, of course. Look, I mean, AOC is a tribute to the rise of the Kardashian culture, in which celebrity status is more important than facts.
Mm-hmm. Well, Newt, it's always so great to talk to you, and thank you for what you've been doing in this. I can't wait to read your China book. When is it out?
It'll be out in October.
Oh, fantastic. All right. Well, obviously,
it's
we'll
basically,
have
it. It's basically Trump versus China.
Excellent. Excellent. I cannot wait to read it. All right, Newt, thanks so much.
Always fun to talk with you.
All right. We'll see you on TV soon. Newt Gingrich here on the Laura Ingraham Podcast. They say that home is where the heart is. Well, the reality is that home is where all of your precious belongings are located, where your family lives. So don't you want to protect your most precious investment? So go with the nation's number one smart home security provider, ADT. They provide everything from video doorbells, indoor and outdoor cameras, smart locks and lights, all controlled from the ADT app or the sound of your voice. So peace of mind, priceless. So get a custom designed ADT home security system connected to first responders installed in your home today. Safety, security and protection are just a click away. Visit ADT.com. That's ADT.com. Pluto TV is the new leading free streaming television service. Watch over 100 TV channels, thousands of movies on demand, all for free. There's no credit card needed, no sign-up required. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies. So what are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again. Pluto TV is free on all your favorite devices. Download Pluto TV today. We have to get into the effort to deplatform conservatives in the culture. Now, this is aside from all the stuff we know they're already doing on social media, Google, Twitter, the difficulty that conservatives have had in withstanding the, quote, safety and security and integrity structures of these, you know, social media platforms. It seems like the conservatives are the ones who always get silenced or suspended, certainly more often than the vile leftists who are always saying something outrageous. And so we see this happening in a bunch of different ways. Remember, it was just a few weeks ago when Joaquin Castro, who's a sitting U.S. congressman, doxed donors to Trump in his own district, put their place of work and their donations online. Now, people say, oh, it's already online. But no, this was framed around the idea that if you donate to Trump, you're a white supremacist. And remember, the same deal happened with this co-founder of SoulCycle and Equinox, also is a Trump donor. So immediately there's this effort to hurt those businesses. Well, and I say deplatform, remove you from the business world or harm you so badly that you'll just make a decision, I'm not going to give to anyone, or I'm not going to give to Trump. Certainly not going to give to Trump. So it's weaponizing the use of social media and the culture against people with whom you disagree. So it's not just putting out your own stuff, your own magazines or online publications or movies or songs. It's about keeping anyone else out off the field. Now, where else is this happening? Well, you see this the series of comments by the for people on the left about Sean Spicer and the controversy that's been caused by this Dancing with the Stars decision to invite him to participate as a contestant. When Tom Bergeron, the main host of Dancing with the Stars, is expressing his unhappiness with the casting, you know where this is going to go. I mean, all these external complaints. How could you put Sean Spicer on the show? This guy has been terrible to us for years by working for Trump. Terrible. Nine sources in and around the news division at ABC spoke to CNN Business. This is this hit guy, Oliver Darcy, who just hits conservatives all the time. All anonymous sources. The staffers expressed a range of opinions. Some say they were just eye-rolling. A couple said they didn't care. One remarked, how long do you think he's going to last? But others said they were pissed. It's a slap in the face to those of us who had to deal with his baloney and the consequences of the ongoing lies and disinformation campaign at the White House. Spicer was horrible to so many of us, another ABC source says. It's disgusting to think he's getting on the show and getting paid by our company. So this other guy from the Queer Eye show, he's a big liberal. He's another host, correct?
He's on the show.
Oh, he's on the show. And so he was actually, fairly reasonable in his views towards Spicer. He said they've had some good conversation. Now he's getting criticized because even though he's a liberal, he said, well, look, we're having a good conversation. He's a sweet guy.
No, let me tell you something. Sean Spicer and I have been talking.
Yeah, like literally, I was most excited to meet him because, like, the thing is that people would look at us and think that we're polar opposites, but I'm a big believer that if you can talk to someone and meet in the middle, you can learn about each other and help each other both grow. And so we have been chatting all day today. Like, he's a good guy, really sweet guy. Yeah, yeah, you know, exactly. Karamo from Queer Eye saying Sean Spicer, nice guy. I know.
So now, according to the New York Post, he's getting criticized as a liberal because he's not trashing Sean Spicer. That's how pathetic these people are. An effort to deplatform conservatives from being a part of the culture. Social media, we already said. Malkin is on with us now. She'll talk about that. But also in the larger culture. It's already dominated by the left. They don't. That's why they try to stop Fox News. It's the only network, and OAN and a few other online ventures are out there. But overwhelmingly, they monopolize it anyway. But just one little person on Dancing with the Stars causes a controversy. Now, an NFL a controversy involving the Dolphins owner, who's a Trump supporter. So we have a new controversy involving that, Steve Ross. Because you can't be a donor to Trump and own an NFL team, or be a co-owner or an investor. You see what they're doing? This is what it's all about. They want to destroy, demonize, and terrorize people away from supporting his re-election. I think they seem really desperate. Joining us now, Michelle Malkin, of course, conservative blogger, syndicated columnist, author of the upcoming book, Cannot Wait. We talked about it on the Ingram Angle. Open Borders, Inc. Michelle and I have been doing this immigration issue and the left's cultural monopoly, education monopoly, etc., for a long time. And there's so much we can talk to her about, but we'll talk to her a little bit about what they're doing with this demonization of Trump donors. And even on a goofy show like Dancing with the Stars, you can't Sean Spicer. I mean, I don't think he's going to win. I don't think you have to worry about that. Michelle, how are you? Good to talk to you.
Good. You know, you're right, Laura. We were woke before there was woke. So, you know, I treasure the battles that we've been through and the scars and wounds we have. But, you know, better late than never for a lot of the people who are opening up their eyes on that issue. And, yeah, I don't think I'm ever going to try Dancing with the Stars. How about you?
Oh my God! No, I'd rather. You and I will go hiking. That's better.
Yeah, that's what we have to do.
That's the better path. So, Michelle, do you see this trend though, with the Dolphins controversy over the co-owner as a Trump donor, Equinox, SoulCycle, all these, you know, fancy women go there because it's expensive and it's a class where you get a lot of cardio workout, and now there was an effort to boycott that, and you know, this little dust up with Sean Spicer, and people are, I'm sure, were complaining when Sarah Huckabee was interviewing around with other networks. She ultimately ended up with Fox News as a contributor, but I'm sure people at other networks were complaining about the idea of her coming there. I couldn't imagine if that didn't happen. So where does this leave us in the cultural landscape as conservatives?
Well, I think with the advent of social media, it's really just catalyzed, and these witch hunts have always happened to conservatives in public life, because the far left can't allow us to become quote unquote mainstream. I mean, God forbid there be a single CEO out there who's made it in the marketplace and is brazen and unapologetic about being a free market Republican and a supporter of Trump. We can't have it, because then it might spread and other people might get over their fear or anxiety of being, publicly identified, on the right side of the aisle. And, you know, that kind of, Alinskyite method, has worked for so long because people didn't want to push back. And now they are, and the floodgates might be open, and I'm actually more encouraged. You know, I think that the Equinox founder should be flattered.
Yeah.
That he's getting that. Unfortunately for people who are not high profile or who don't have, private security, I can understand why they fear it, why they don't want to, come out of the metaphorical closet. I mean, it's hard when you live outside of the Beltway bubble or, outside of the, of the coast to have to deal with that stuff. It's hard, but I think it, you know, when you have high profile people who are willing to fight back, it emboldens the rest of us.
Yeah, so they removed this Stephen Ross from the social justice committee of the NFL because he's donated to Trump. I mean, I'm sure that's a crushing blow to his ego. I'd just say thanks. I got other things to do with my free time. I don't need to be on the social justice panel.
Social justice.
This is all just a crock. It's such a crock. Giveaway to Kanye, oh, not Kanye, Jay-Z. He gets a big giveaway to Jay-Z as if he's like a billionaire already. He already has a billionaire. But, you know, look, you can't blame him. I guess he's just, it's kind of a free market for social justice kind of scams here.
Yeah, that's right. He's cashing in. I guess he's a social justice capitalist. But it's kind of funny because the wokey-wokes don't think that he's, you know, the proper spokesperson for them. You know, and so they're calling him a sellout.
So everyone's, it's like the circular firing squad. Like Obama's now a raging moderate or a conservative even because of the stuff he didn't do. So it is kind of fun to see it. And I even with Trump's numbers not where I think they should be with this economy and his tendency to swing at every insult and so forth, which drives me crazy. Even with that, Michelle, the left just seems so utterly out of gas to me. I mean, they just seem sputtering, desperate, pessimistic, cynical, in a way that it's not attractive, I don't think. Maybe I'm wrong here, but I don't see a real glow around any of these people.
No, I mean, and yes, they're quite a depressing bunch, the lot of them. There's no hope and there's no change. At least a Barack Obama mastered that sort of, you know, faux storytelling, and kept that halo around him that was photoshopped in by AP photographers. But no, there's no glow.
No. And I know you've written about this and talked about this, and for some of our listeners, they hear Google manipulation and their eyes glaze over. Oh, no, that's not how. That's just complicated. I can't understand that. But when Robert Epstein, who's a professor who did this extensive investigation into Google's use of data, and especially in light of this 2020 campaign, he testified on Capitol Hill and said this.
Looking forward, you said in subsequent elections, Google and Facebook and Twitter and big tech manipulation could manipulate as many as 15 million votes in a subsequent election?
In 2020, if all these companies are supporting the same candidate, there are 15 million votes on the line that can be shifted without people's knowledge and without leaving a paper trail for authorities to trace. In 2020, you can bet that all of these companies are going to go all out, and the methods that they're using are invisible, they're subliminal, they're more powerful than most any effects I've ever seen in the behavioral sciences, and I've been in the behavioral sciences for almost 40 years.
Absurd. This is just absurd. This is more conspiracy theories from the conservatives. What do we say to respond to that?
Well, not only is Robert Epstein a respected mainstream researcher on these issues, but you've got Google whistleblowers now coming out of the woodworks left and right to affirm that the company has been putting its huge Silicon Valley thumb on the scale. And it's not just about conservatives in the social media space who are having their free speech rights squelched. But it's also about the impact that it's having on elections. And, you know, these Google CEOs have all but declared that the reason why they're cracking down and deplatforming peaceful people on the Internet who are simply expressing their opinions is because they want to deny President Trump another win in 2020. They're brazen about it. And, you know, everybody in the Beltway is saying they want to do something about it. They're monitoring the situation.
Oh, no.
And meantime, the Overton window is closing.
Yeah, and I think monitoring you know, monitoring the situation is, yeah. I mean, we need a lot more than that.
Sure do.
I mean, this could shift the election, though, because it's just, you know, like, what is it? How many thousands of votes in the states where it was close made a difference? Not many. Tens of thousands. Yes. Not millions. Yes. It doesn't take, you don't have to shift millions of votes. You just have to shift tens of thousands of votes and you can win the election. I mean, Trump didn't win the popular vote. Everybody knows that because the left always crows about that. So this is a, this is serious business.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, it is a form of algorithmic tyranny. I mean, for the longest time, you know, from the time that I planted my flag on the internet space almost 20 years ago, we were under the illusion that, you know, the cream would rise to the top. And organically, if you were providing good quality information, you'd end up on that first page of the first 10 search terms on Google. And, of course, we now know that you've got these social justice engineers, not software engineers, policing the phrases that people will type into the Google search engine and then downgrading it if it doesn't fit with their ideological worldview.
Yeah. Well, again, you've dealt with this. You've dealt with this in your own Twitter account and your Facebook account, and I always read what you say when it's, whether it's Laura Loomer or these other people getting blocked off on social media, and people say, oh, you're exaggerating. No, it actually is happening every minute of every day to conservatives who deserve a voice just as much as anyone else.
That's exactly right. And Laura Loomer was really sort of the sentinel. You know, she was the canary in the coal mine, and we worry about the Chinese social credit system, but it has come to America and largely through the tyrants at Google. I mean, and it's not just Google, of course. Laura can't get an Uber because they didn't like her views about Sharia law. And, you know, how
That's
soon is it before I have to worry that my blog might not exist?
That's terrifying. I mean, that is a... That in and of itself is terrifying. And what else have you seen in your own postings, Michelle, that have told you and indicated to you there's a real, real problem here?
Well, it's confirmed that my Twitter account has been shadow banned for at least a year, probably more. I've had Facebook posts that complained about censorship be censored and taken down. I know my Instagram account has been monitored. I have my blog on a platform called WordPress, and I have friends who have been diligent investigators of things like the refugee resettlement racket who've had their entire websites polled and taken down without any notice and then confirmed that it was because of the ideological content that they were targeted. So we are really under siege, and there was a golden period for conservative social media when our influence was through the roof. I mean, it was conservative bloggers, the original generation of them, that helped bring Dan Rather down, and it's because of their effectiveness that that there is this declared war. It's not even an undeclared war anymore against those of us who've been able to be fortunate enough to make a living off of it. And, of course, that's a warning to everyone else, too. And you know from all your years in talk radio that the far left has, you know, waged these campaigns to squelch our speech. And so, you know, it's all of a piece.
No, they're not going to be happy until they dominate every platform, every minute of the day, political, cultural, journalistic, universities, and they've gone a long way to, you know, dominating the universities. But then they had this inconvenient election in 2016, and now we have a record number of judges, which is going to be one of Trump's great legacies, is what he's done for the federal bench, and the tyranny of the judiciary could at least be blunted with a Trump re-election. Michelle, I have to get your take before I let you go on Paul Ryan moving back to D.C.
Has he ever left?
I know he's been here since like 27 years old, but he made a big deal, Michelle, about I have to go home on the weekends. What was that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's the ultimate Beltway swamp creature. And we'll never be rid of him. You know, it was a triumph when he did finally retire, but he's in and of D.C. He always will be. He's everything that's wrong with the establishment Republican Party. And, you know, I think there's got to be a reckoning, because I think there's still too many grassroots conservative Republicans that have gone along with that type of so-called leadership that has basically flushed America down the toilet.
Right. Michelle Malkin, thanks so much for spending so much time with us. It's always great to hear from you. And we cannot wait for your new book. And it's just going to be a huge smash. Open Borders, Inc. Michelle Malkin here on the Laura Ingraham Podcast. And I want to thank all of our great sponsors, including Genucel, ADT Home Security, Pluto TV, Delta Animal Rescue. We love you all. You help provide this podcast free every week. And thank you so much for being with us. Remember, America now and forever on the Laura Ingraham Podcast.